Another blood-red sunset and yet another moon facing still another 100 miles to my next resting place. Driving down the road, eyes on the horizon, within my car I'm all alone, but feeling good and feeling strong, knowing that this path I'm on brings me to myself. I'm driving.
Hey now all, this is the Spirit Doctor, Kelly Sparta, and you are listening to Spirit Sherpa, the show that helps and encourages you on your journey to unlock your magic mojo. Today I'm joined once again by Perfectly G from TikTok, Grant Merrill.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
I'm so glad to have you here again. I am so excited to keep going on this. And just for those of you who are going, wait, Perfectly G, wasn't it Pastor G? Yes, it was Pastor G, but you've got a story about that.
I do, yes. I recently surrendered my credentials, and so my name on TikTok has changed. I am Perfectly G, as I have undone some of my own faith and spirituality over the last few years. I parted ways with the institution that I was working for. So
there you go. And hence the name change on TikTok. So, and you know, we all have to go there for the cake videos. Well, I saw the recent one where you had the sneakers on that were supposed to be the perfect girl sneakers or something. I can't remember. That was funny. I love watching your videos. They're awesome. So we're going to talk some more about the seven deadly sins and virtues. I just think, you know what? I'm just having a moment of going, you know, when I set this up, I was like, yeah, let's get a representative of the church to come in and talk about the seven deadly sins. And in true Kelly fashion, because I carry the energy of change, I picked the one person who's no longer going to be a member of the church.
Little did we know that was in the works a long time ago. However, I did make that choice to leave my institution. But yes, here I am.
By no stretch of the imagination did I think that it was my fault that you did it. I just knew that me carrying the energy of change, I would pick the person who was in massive change. Right, you know, because that's just how I roll.
I am happy to still speak from a progressive Christian standpoint. That is the world I exist in still. And and today's topic is not my favorite either. So,
well, half of it's good. Yeah. The other half is kind of annoying. Yeah. But yes. So, I'm just laughing at myself is really what it comes down to, because I'm very good at that, is finding the one person who's in the midst of massive change. Right. It's just, can we talk for a minute?
We can.
Because, you know, being a shaman, being a transformational shaman, doing massive change work with people all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I am... my life doesn't get to be super stable, right? I got to be stable for a while because I lived in a community house. I ran a community house and other people would move. And so I could stay because my life was constantly changing because we were constantly having new roommates move in and things like that. And so I got to stay in the same place for 8 years, which was like the longest I've ever lived anywhere in my entire life, right? I've moved I can't remember if it's 39 or 40 times in my life. I've moved a lot. And so, you know, now we're here in Richmond. We've been in this house for 2 years and we're already planning to move out of country. Right? We're talking about Spain. We'll see where we end up. So if you're a listener in Spain, specifically in Granada, I'm not sure how you say it, near the Alhambra, we're looking to come and visit. So if you're a listener and you're in that area, please reach out. But yeah, I mean, life is just constantly changing. And the people that I bring into my life are constantly in change.
And it's so interesting you say that. I have had the gift, the joy of being a healer in four churches over 15 years of ministry. And so in the midst of that, like, I have been the stable presence in the midst of massive changes, of massive cultural changes, of pastoral changes, of construction projects. And in this last congregation I was serving, I was the one undergoing massive change, and I needed to leave so that I had my own stability to heal. I couldn't heal while healing at the same time.
Yes. And that's an important thing, right? Because, you know, we're doing a series on the podcast about becoming a light worker. And, you know, this is not one of those series, but it's an important thing to recognize that you cannot do your own healing work and heal others at the same time. It's not possible, and it's actively damaging either to you or to them or both. And so, you know, I often have people walk into a change process and the first thing they say is, I want to save everybody. I want to bring this to the world. I want to, you know, whatever, right? And I look at them and I'm like, do your own work first, right? Because once you're up and running and doing work for others, you will not have the time, space, or energy to do your own work. And you're not safe to work with others until you've done your own work. So these are things to consider. Not the topic that we're talking about today, but, you know, hey, we like to fly by the seat of our pants and make shit up as we go, because that's who we are. So there you go. So we are talking about lust and chastity today, which, you know, you would think I would really want to get into, because, you know, lust is awesome. Chastity, not so much, but, you know. Well, chastity's fine if you're choosing it. If you're being forced into it, not so much, right? So, yeah. So, you know, this is one of my biggest things with the church, right? Is you can't have pleasure. There can be no pleasure. All pleasure comes from God, and it is not of the body. And I'm like, then why are we on the planet? Why did God give us a body if we weren't meant to enjoy it? So. Yeah, it's, you know, I have a funny story. So I grew up in a bunch of different places and therefore went to a bunch of different youth groups over the years, because my mother was non-religious. And so, you know, she's like, I'll take you to youth group, but I'm not going to church with you. So I went to a bunch of different ones, and I ended up at a summer camp for, it was a Southern Baptist Southern camp. Oh, yes. And the pastor there was very young, you know, the kid, the teenager's pastor. He was talking to kids who were, you know, I would say we were like 12 to 16 or something, right? And he was probably 22. he was a young guy. The topic of masturbation came up, and he was talking about, you know, one of the guys was asking, he's like, Christ had to masturbate. He had to, right? And, you know, so the euphemism for masturbation in this conversation became whatnot and whatnot, right? And what was so funny is, he had a really lovely way of looking at it. And he didn't shame you. He didn't do the body shaming thing. And he was very healthy in the way he responded to the conversation. But throughout the rest of the weekend, because we were there for a whole weekend and this happened early on, people would say whatnot, and all of the kids would start laughing hysterically. but you know, it's like, yeah, and we're talking about Christ masturbating. Yay. Okay. So, you know, lust in the church has been a problem in terms of, you know, well, any sexual anything. And yet Catholicism is like, go forth and be fruitful.
Just don't have fun doing it. Just don't have fun doing it. Yeah.
Sex is for procreation. Don't have fun. Yeah. So
specifically in this, and I think it's so interesting. So I come out of a Protestant tradition, specifically a fundamentalist Protestant tradition. And I grew up at the height of purity culture within evangelicalism. I mean, that's a large thing on TikTok right now, is the undoing of purity culture. And so I grew up in that. I remember reading books like I Kissed Dating Goodbye. You know, the whole,
you
the whole,
what?
I Kissed Dating Goodbye was the name of this book. And the thought line was, you shouldn't date unless you know you're going to marry the person. So literally it was setting up to go on a first date only if you were ready to marry that person, which is just absolutely nuts. But specifically, I think from a more honest Christian perspective, I would say from a truly Catholic or Orthodox perspective, lust is not really about pleasure. Lust is about the using of others for our own pleasure, which usually we think of in sexual terms. Specifically, we talk about lust in sexual terms, but the concept moves towards anything. It's using others for our own pleasure, whether that be sexual or otherwise. And that could involve actual acts with others, or it could involve not. You know, according to the Gospels, Jesus compares looking at a woman disrespectfully as lust, or as the same as committing adultery. And it's ironic because as much as we denounce lust in evangelical traditions, the truth is that when you grow up in a purity culture, when you're married, immediately everything is not only okay, but it is the wife's job, according to evangelicalism, to make sure that her husband is happy all the time, which is using someone for your own pleasure. It is, by definition, lust. And so this topic is wonderful because we think of lust in this one term, but really we're talking about using others. And chastity really is not the antidote. It's not the counter virtue of not using others. I mean, there are healthy ways of viewing sexuality without abstaining from sexuality.
In terms of the not using others for your pleasure against their will would be the presumption.
Absolutely. Against their will, or using it in a way that's disrespectful to their being.
We are not condemning kink culture, for instance. Right. Yeah. Because, you know, everything's consensual, and as long as it's consensual, it is what it is, right? What adults do in their own time is their own business, right? And so, you know, the key here is the not using someone else for your pleasure, which is a big part of the Me Too movement, right? The idea that you don't look at someone else for your pleasure, right? And then I think the challenge, and this is the argument that a lot of men make in regards to that, which is, well, she dressed that way, so she was asking for it, right? And there's a fine line there, because some people dress that way because they want the male gaze. It is true that is true. I have been that person. I will speak from personal experience. I have gone out dressed in very lewd and luscious ways because I wanted to be noticed and I liked the gaze. And that's what I wanted. And then I have also dressed in very lewd and luscious ways, not seeking the male gaze. And so it becomes a difficult line to navigate for men, because one, they're taught that women are there for their pleasure. That's been our cultural norm, right? And two, now that we're changing the rules, well, what do you mean I have to figure out what consent is? And, you know, how do I determine consent when it's about my gaze, right? And so that becomes its own thing, right? And, you know, I think it's as simple as, you know, don't approach somebody you don't know. Let's start with that, in a disrespectful fashion, right? Now, you know, 75% of my listeners are women, and the 25 that are guys, I'm pretty sure you guys are not the problem, because
that's probably an accurate guess. Yes.
I'm pretty sure you guys are not the problem. But, you know, if your guy friends who are the problem ask you, then these would be some good rules to set out, right? You know, lust is about using someone else for your pleasure, right? So, you know, there's a lot of ways to think about that. And porn on the internet is a classic example. Now, if you're selling the porn, then presumably you are in consent, right? Because you have been paid for or are being paid for the porn. If you have uploaded of your own free will to a website, something that you have done, then sure. Okay. If, however, someone else has uploaded something of you without your knowledge or consent, now we're over into the lust and the using piece, right? Yeah. Okay. So I think we've defined lust, but I think there's another piece to it, because there is a addictive quality to the energy of lust, and that addictive attachment energy to the energy of lust is inherently a problem from a spiritual healing perspective. Because when you go into addiction or attachment, which is in the second chakra, which is where lust resides, right? Typically, what that means is that you've pulled an issue out of your third or fourth chakra. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. Nobody notices me. I'm not important, whatever. And you've yanked it down into your pleasure center, and you're now trying to fill it with the behavior that is going to temporarily numb or make it go away, right? And that is never going to solve the problem. What happens is you become a black hole of need that can never be filled, right? Because it's being filled in a chakra in which it doesn't exist, right? And so lust in and of itself is an indicator of this particular spiritual wound. I've got a book coming out. It should be out by the time this is airing. It's called The Overachiever's Guide to Nailing Your Spiritual Growth in Record Time. Nailing being hysterical in this context. Yes. But yes, I love the double entendre. Makes me happy. So, but in it, I talk about all the different types of spiritual wounds that I have found in spiritual seekers over the last decade that I've been doing energy scans. I've done over 3,000 energy scans for people, and these are the blocks and wounds that came up. And not everybody had all of them, but everybody had some of them, right? And so that's one of the ones that we talk about, is the addictions and the attachments. Lust in this context is kind of similar to the Buddhist version of desire, right? Not exactly, because it's not the using of someone else in desire, right? But it is in the idea of the wanting of something that is unattainable in some fashion, right? Because, wanting something is fine. Desiring and obsessing and, being attached to something that you're not going to get is a totally different animal. That is the source of all suffering. And we've had that conversation before, right? So, but in this context, it's kind of similar to desire in that way as well. And so it feels like there's like so many layers to this one, right? Yeah. And of course it's seductive, because, lust. Even if it's not sexual, it's seductive, right? Because it draws you in with the promise of fulfilling all the things that you don't like about yourself, right? And you're like, oh, it's kind of like the bargain with the devil, right? It's like the contract with the devil. You do this and I'll make you feel all better. You just have to trade in your soul. So anything more from the Christian side of things before we go into the opposite, or into the virtual, I should say?
I think that it's interesting, because lust being one of the seven deadly sins, the seven cardinal sins, it does seem at first glance as if Orthodox Christian doctrine, Orthodox theology has demonized sexuality. When in reality, women through Christian history are my heroines. I love them. The desert mothers, lots of the ancient Christian mystics, Hildegard, Brigid, wildly sexual writings from many women within Christian history. Some of the middle-aged nuns that wrote, some of the Christian mystics wrote wildly sexual accounts of experiences with Christ. I mean, they describe sexual organs and erotic and orgasmic experiences with the spirit. And, you know, on one hand, you look at that and say, well, it's because you were a nun and it wasn't happening elsewhere. But on the other hand, I think it's because there's something about the divine spirit that is revealed to us in our own bodies and sexuality, one way or another, whether that be through the physical act of sex, or whether that be just through being present in our own skin. That is inherently being present. And that's actually my New Year's resolution this year, was to be present in my body, to be aware of my body's presence at all times, and to try to feel myself and feel what I'm experiencing. And that is inherently sexual, to be present in my body, even if it's nothing to do with intimacy at all. And so I think it's interesting, as much as we tend to demonize sexuality, within Christian doctrine and Christian writing, sexuality and spirituality are really held together in the same hand, because they're almost inseparable, which is perhaps why we demonize sexuality, because we're afraid we will. It's the Garden of Eden, that you will become like God. Perhaps we feel that we're flying too close to the sun when we express ourselves in intimate ways. So.
Yeah. Well, and in tantric tradition, the concept of having a spiritual orgasm is actually fairly common. I mean, it's part of the tradition, and there are energy movements through the body that are called kriyas, that are precursors to the orgasm of the energy. And so the energy orgasm is not for those of you who've never experienced it, it's not the same as a physical orgasm, although they can coexist at the same time. But an energy orgasm is literally the culmination of the blossoming of the energy into its fullest expression, which is an opening into the divine. And so as you step into the opening into the divine, in tantric tradition, the woman is the entry point into the divine for the man. And when I say woman and man, masculine and feminine energies. Okay. So a man can hold the feminine and a woman can hold the masculine. And so it works the same for heterosexual and homosexual couples, as well as multiple partners and whatever. Right. But, the feminine is probably the better way to put this, holds the energy for the masculine, with the idea that the masculine, being so directed and head-based and focused and so on, has a hard time opening into beingness, which is required for this transition into the divine. The beingness requires being all in your body, not in your head. It requires being fully present in your body and aware of everything that's going on without bullshit running through your brain saying, no, that's not good, or I should be doing this, or da 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 da, or oh, I shouldn't feel this good, or oh, let me do something for you instead. I can't receive this much. I'm all that goes on, right? And the energy requires a surrender to the experience and to the sensations and to the energy. That process is something that is really something nuns excel at, because they're in surrender. They are in their connection to spirit. They're in their entire lives are around that. So I'm not at all surprised that they would have these experiences, because they're inherently practicing the state required to get to that experience. You know, the concept of sexuality as sacred, and I need to do an episode on this, clearly. I'm stunned I haven't yet, to be honest. But, the concept of sacred sexuality is inherent throughout most traditions. Yeah. And so, there's nothing saying that sexuality is bad. Now, we've spent 20 minutes talking about lust, and we have about 7 minutes left in the episode to talk about chastity. So before we get too far afield, we need to start talking about chastity, because otherwise we won't talk about it at all, because, you know, clearly we don't like it. But there's a balance to be had, right? And so chastity, I went and looked it up, and it literally is, you know, the absence of sexuality. And the idea of removing oneself from amoral sexual experiences, not all sexual experiences. It's not, I'm sorry, not chastity, celibacy. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
So chastity and celibacy are not necessarily the same thing, though. Chastity is the absence of amoral sexual activity, right? And lust is the using of another, which would be the amoral side, right? Right. So theoretically, the nuns are chaste, even when they're having energy orgasms with Christ. Yes. And so chaste, and it's interesting that to chasten someone is to shame them almost, right? That's where the language has gone, right? And so that implies that to be chaste is to be without shame. Years ago, when I was stepping into my sexual self, there was a book that came out called the Ethical Slut. And it was all about stepping into your unshamed self in your sexuality. And so being an ethical slut would be considered chaste. Everything consent based, choosing your path, deciding what you wanted, you know, everyone's okay with it. We're being good within, but here's the thing, right? Amoral is the word. And whose morals are we talking about?
Well, within Christianity, we talk about the church's morals. We want to claim that they're God's morals, but in reality, the divine's morals look vastly different than the morals that the church has defined. I would say within a more honest answer, I would say that the divine imparts morals to each of us per our own place in life. And so, you know, I am a sex positive person who would identify as a Christian, and I am sex worker positive. And, you know, those are the morals that I have taken on. And so my amoral looks very different than the amoral of the Notre Dame students that are just down the road, or at least that they would claim, perhaps. Absolutely. It is who owns morals, perhaps, is the bottom line of this conversation, you know?
Well, and if you look at Christ's life, to the best of my knowledge, there's nothing in the Bible that says anything about sexuality in Christ at all. However, he lived and traveled with Mary Magdalene.
Yes. Yes. My favorite Bible character, just for the record. I love Mary Magdalene. I've been to Magdala on the Sea of Galilee. She is like, her story resonates in my soul. And my favorite moment in any of the Gospels is Easter morning from John's depiction of the Gospel, or from John's depiction of Easter. And there's this deeply intimate moment in the garden where Peter and the other disciple had just ran away from the tomb. They were disappointed because it's empty. And Mary Magdalene turns around and she sees who she believes to be the gardener. She realizes, her eyes are opened. She realizes that it is the resurrected Christ in the story, or at least in the narrative. And there's this intimate moment where she falls at his feet, grabs him, and says, Rabboni, which means teacher. And he says, don't hold on to me. I've not yet ascended. But the language in the original language is so deeply intimate, not necessarily sexual, but more intimate than perhaps any other moment in any other gospel. And there's that tinge of tension. I started to say sexual tension, I'm not uncomfortable with the idea that they could be lovers. I'm not uncomfortable with that, but I won't lay that into this narrative. There's that tension that we see unlike anywhere else, and I love that about her. Now that being said, the church painted her a harlot, unfortunately. She's not a prostitute, but boy, the Catholic Church claimed it for several centuries. So,
well, now, if I recall correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm pulling off of, you know, who knows what right now, because it's coming out of deep out of my memory banks. But wasn't it that she was married to someone else and left her husband to follow Christ? Was that not the case?
No, we don't know anything about Mary Magdalene's life other than she was from Magdala. What we can assume, we know that in the Gospels, she had seven demons released from her, which, again, there's all kinds of poetry, seven being the Jewish symbolism for perfection. So she had the perfect amount past life or whatever released from her past livelihood. But we know that she was wealthy, that she was a businesswoman, and that she had demons released from her. Now there are other Marys, there are other women in the Gospels that down the years, people had assumed perhaps could be Mary Magdalene, that there was a woman who left her husband, that there was a woman who was caught in adultery. There were, and people have incorrectly assumed that perhaps that's Mary Magdalene. But in essence, Mary Magdalene got a bad rap because she was a strong, wealthy businesswoman who I would say was the beloved disciple. She was, in my opinion, she was the beloved disciple. She was Jesus' favorite. And so, of course, she's going to get a bad rap. She would have been the rightful first pope as well. However, I won't make that argument today. She should have been the first pope.
Was there a book of Mary?
There is a Gospel of Mary. And actually, it's a lovely text. It wasn't canonized, of course, but it is a beautiful text. There are lots of extra canonical or books outside of the 66 canonical books in the Bible that are worth reading. And the Gospel of Mary is lovely. It's a lovely, some beautiful stories of Jesus' life. Lovely perspective.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you don't know the Council of Nicaea in like 1000?
Around late 300s, early 400s.
Oh, I thought it was later. But the Council of Nicaea, you know, removed a bunch of books. They were like, oh, no, we're throwing this one out and that one out and the other one out. Because, you know, an incomplete history is better than a complete history because it tells what we want it to say. Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, if we're talking chasteness, it is all about the morals, right?
Yes.
And so, you know, the key is coming back to this idea of whose morals, because this is one of the things I talk to my students about all the time. It's like, look, you cannot live your life by one set of values and judge your life by a different set and ever expect to find happiness. And so choose your values, your morals, wisely, and live by the same ones that you've judged yourself by, because otherwise you're just setting yourself up for unhappiness. Right? Okay. Wow. All right. Well, we had a lot to talk about on this topic. That's not surprising. But
we could go for another 30 minutes on this.
I know. I have so much I could say.
Invite me back for your sexuality and spirituality.
Okay.
Please.
All right. Invite me back. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do several of those because, you know, I have so many friends in that world. So, yeah, for those of you who don't know, I used to teach Tantra back in the day. So that's why I'm like, oh, and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So, yeah. So I think we're going to leave this topic here. And let's just wrap it up with a thought. Let me think for a second. There's a, on the path to embodiment, your morals that you choose and the cleanliness of your spirit, not from a, you know, shame based, but from a, how much you have cleared your wounds, right? Will determine the health of your sexuality. Little bow on it right there. How about that? All right. So they can find you at Perfectly G, the letter G, on TikTok. And for those of you who have not yet, please subscribe and rate the podcast and go and check out Perfectly G on TikTok. I'm also on TikTok at Kelly Sparta. And if you are on your spiritual path and you would like some help accelerating that journey, check out the Inner Peace 101 program. I would love to talk to you. And with that, we will call this episode complete. Tune in next time when I share another episode on energy, magic, and the spirit world. I'm Kelly Sparta, here with Grant Merrill, and you have been listening to Spirit Sherpa. So long, everyone.
Goodbye.
Driving down the road, eyes on the horizon. Within my car, I'm all alone. But feeling good and feeling strong. Knowing that this path I'm on brings me to myself. I'm driving.
Are you waking up to the spiritual world and realizing that you have no idea what you're doing, but you feel like you kind of probably should, especially since you seem to be seeing things and feeling things and having things see you that maybe aren't so great, and that you might want to actually control your experience of that? Well, I have great news for you, because our Welcome to the Woo program does just that for you. It teaches you how to hold your energy field, manage your energy field, clear your energy field, protect your energy field, and learn how to protect your space. And you learn how to do basic divination and talk to your guides so that you feel like you actually have a clue and have a way to talk to the guides that will help you to figure everything else out. And it teaches you how to make sure that you feel mentally, emotionally, and energetically safe. That means that we also deal with things like fear and anxiety and worry and dread and self-doubt and inner and outer judgments. And we help you build a foundation of self-support and courage. All of these things together create a solid sense of safety in your own life. They will reduce your stress levels in half, guaranteed. So visit the website at kellysparta.com and find out more about the Welcome to the Woo program. Your future awaits.